You've performed and recorded the major classical rep for flute, and you've been a soloist with just about every major orchestra in the world. I wanted to know just off the bat, what motivates you?
Well, I like to get it right for myself. You know, it's the same when you play golf. You're not trying to beat Tiger Woods. You're just trying to get it in the hole. Right?
Yeah. You're your own worst critic. Well, I kind of get that. I was a clarinetist, and I remember spending an entire lesson playing one measure of music with my teacher and just thinking about the sound and stuff like that. I'm wondering, inside your mind, Sir James, when you're trying to get it right, trying to get it in the hole, what sorts of things come up after a performance that make you think or motivates you to do it better next time? Just an example or two for the non-musician, I guess, out there.
I'm more of an on-site, at-the-moment type of guy. You know, I fix it as I'm doing it. You know what it's like when you have a reed and you think, oh, man, this reed is a killer in the second octave, but it's not so good in the first octave, right?
Oh, yeah.
So what do? You make an adjustment for the first octave to try your best to get a good tone anyway. And it's the same with the embouchure and the flute. Sometimes you might have a difficulty with a C-sharp or something, getting it in tune. So you really, the next time the C-sharp comes up in context in the concert, you really deal with it and nail it.
And that's the interest for you. I mean, that's the fascination in performance, in the moment.
That's one thing. Then there's another thing, which is the fingers. You know, getting the fingers really clean all the time is a very important thing, because if the fingers are not doing it, your legato is going to suffer. Your staccato is going to suffer because the fingers won't be in the same place as the embouchure, you know?
Yeah. Do you ever, at this stage in your career, have a day or a bad day where you just hate the flute?
No. No, I like playing the flute, otherwise I wouldn't be doing it at this age.
How do you rethink those little frustrations that creep in or the things you're trying to perfect in such a way that it's constructive and still really positive for you?
Well, I have a very good approach to doing anything, you know. I like to just get everything that I do right. You know, my wife, she always tells everybody, don't ask Jimmy to do anything just before dinner, because if he can't get it right, he's not coming to dinner. This is an aspect of my personality.
Yeah.
I just like to get the things that I'm doing right. If it's fixing a lamp or cleaning up some books, I just like to get it done.
I can relate. You've always seemed to me, at least, just as comfortable playing the hardest orchestral rep way back in the Berlin Philharmonic days as you do playing, you know, Celtic or American folk or tango or chamber music or pops. Is there these days an ideal performance scenario for you or where you're happiest?
Well, of course, I like playing classical music the best because that's what I'm best at. But all these other things, they come in for the same sort of treatment. You know, when I recorded any song, I didn't record it from the point of view of it being a pop song. I recorded it from the point of view of being something that I had to get perfect. The same like you would record, let's say, Syrinx or something like that.
Yeah. Are there any other styles of music out there or world music that you hope to pursue? And
No, I'm not into that anymore. I'm really, what's occupying my mind now is a teaching thing on the web. We've recorded 15 segments of me teaching the flute, and we're going to have it out soon, and it will have subtitles in Korean, Japanese, Chinese, and all that sort of stuff.
Hmm. How much of your fascination and interest in teaching comes from your early studies with some of the great flute teachers out there?
Yeah, well, you know, I was thinking about this the other day, and I'm wondering if there are great flute teachers. And I came to the conclusion that the method is the thing that works the best. You must know that people who play the clarinet, they use the close method, right?
Yeah.
So you could use that on your own without a teacher, and you would succeed in some degree. I mean, if you have a teacher to guide you around it, it's better. But if the teacher does not use that method and uses the teacher's method, you're going to sound like the teacher, and you have to ask yourself, how successful is this guy, and is this really what I want to do, sound like him?
Hmm.
So this is what I was thinking when I was a kid. I thought the best flute player I ever heard in my life was Marcel Moyes. I mean, he stuck out a mile amongst all the other ones. You know, he had a great tone, and somehow or other, there was a life in his playing that wasn't in the other people. And that's what I wanted to do. So I used only his method. And when I got to the conservatoire in Paris, all the kids were using his method. But the teacher, what was he doing? He was reading the paper and smoking cigarettes. And you see, we had two lessons a week. I was in the French class, by the way, not the foreigners class, which was no good.
Yes.
The French class, we had to play scales one day and pieces the next day. So two times a week we turn up and we would play all the scales, chromatic scale, the whole tone scales, extended arpeggios, then major and minor scales, and arpeggios on three notes, and then arpeggios on five notes with the seventh. So this took about maybe 40 minutes to do, and you had to do the whole lot every day. You had to stand up in front of the class and play all this stuff. Now, you were certainly, for sure, not going to be foolish and play badly in front of the other kids. So the method stood out there. You see what I mean?
Yeah. It seems like your emphasis is on individual expression versus back then it was pretty much not cookie cutter, but you wanted to sound like Moise. You did X, Y, Z, and then...
People were telling me, oh, you know, Jimmy, you're beginning to sound like Marcel Moise. I thought, that's fine. I'd rather sound like him than sound like any of these other duffers. And then, of course, I asked Moise about this, and he said, you know, he said, when I was a kid, I wanted to sound like Philippe Gilbert.
Hmm.
And then he said, one day I discovered that I was Marcel Moise, and it was not so bad.
I love that story. But you've done for the flute what Moise did for the flute, and in a sense, I mean, at least my flutist friends will say that you've raised the bar, just like a Charlie Parker raised the bar for jazz musicians moving forward.
Right.
But from your perspective, what have you given to the flute that you hope sticks and that you're proud of?
Well, a good tone, a good technique, and a good method of interpretation.
And it's just so natural. Along the way, could you give me an inkling as to maybe one of those? I know it's a process, Sir James. I know it goes over decades and decades. But was there a period or something that you garnered along the way in terms of performance that you've, in your own way, figured out that you could share that was really meaningful to you along this path?
Well, you know, performance is a very curious thing. You only get better at it doing it. You don't get better at it practicing at home.
Hmm.
You get better standing in front of an audience and doing it. And when I teach the Mozart D major concerto, for example, I'm not teaching it from a perspective of a pedagogue in a classroom who's never played it before. I've played it hundreds of times. I know what happens exactly in every bar of the piece. I know which part in the strings should be brought out in the introduction and all that sort of stuff. I know how to make it work. It's with this armor that I get teaching the kids. And, you know, yesterday I was at the house of a friend of mine who's 16 years old, and he came and played in my class last summer in July, and he was so shy that he could hardly play. And, in fact, he didn't play all that well. But yesterday I couldn't believe my ears when I heard this kid play. I mean, it was really amazing. He was playing things like Daphnis and Chloe. And it was just amazing.
16.
I think we could really press the right button on that one.
What was the difference? Just putting him at ease in a different way? Or how did that, what was the transformation?
No, build up the confidence by showing him how to do it. You know, giving him a foundation of good scales and good articulation and good sound production. All these things together gets rid of your fears because you're not afraid of anything.
You said it right off the bat, it seems like, Sir James, the way you crystallized the motivation for you being in the moment and actually attacking, dealing with the little performance problems that do creep up in any performance. Something can go wrong. The heat can go off, or you know, someone can have a fit in the audience. But for a lot of performers, those moments are what throw somebody off. So just coming to a place in your playing where you embrace those moments seems like that's kind of a level to aspire to, I guess, for any performer.
Yes, it is. It is. You know, every concert hall is different, and every audience is different. And the better the concert hall is, the better the audience is, because the audience enjoy the sound of a good concert hall.
What's the best sounding concert hall you've ever performed in?
Well, Ann Arbor's great. And there's another one in Champaign, Illinois.
How about that?
And there's one in Kansas City has got a brilliant concert hall, I tell you. It's amazing. The last time I played a recital there, it's called the Fox Theater, my wife thinks. And the last time I played there, I noticed in the program that they billed the concert hall as being the Carnegie Hall of the West or something like that. I told the audience, you know, this is not the Carnegie Hall of the West. This is better than Carnegie Hall because I played in Carnegie Hall.
I'm sure they were glad to hear that.
And I would like my piano player here, Michael, to make his debut in America in this hall. And I said to him, Michael, give us a tune. So you know what he did? He played the Liszt paraphrase on Rigoletto and brought the house down.
That's great. Lady Galway right there, and you're coming to Winston-Salem, both of you all, to play. What have you learned from Lady Galway, I should say, and what has she learned from you?
Well, I've learned that when you play with the same partner often enough, it doesn't matter how good the other one is. If it's not Lady Galway, my wife, that is, if it's not my wife, I have a hard time putting it together with another flute player because you have to match the other flute player. Well, I really don't want to match the other flute player. I think it would be better if they match me.
Mm.
And they're not always in a situation like that, that they can do that. They're proficient players, but maybe they have a dullness of sound or something different about them that it sounds like two flutes instead of one.
Yeah. Well, your tour schedule coming up is just intense by any measure. I'm looking at, after Winston-Salem, it's Teatro Verdi in Italy, then you're off to Royal Albert Hall in London and Ankara Music Festival in Turkey. And that's just April, I should let listeners know. But how do you both stay fresh on tour like that?
I try not to do too many things. You know, a lot of people, when they get to a little town, instead of concentrating on the job while they're there, they go off to the local art gallery, the local restaurant, and they check out all the tourist things. I don't check out the tourist things at all. I'm there to play the flute, and that's what I do. I have to tell the kids about this because I have a new chat room. I had a chat room on Yahoo, and we're closing it down. But I'm loath to do that because I think it was a good chat room. And we're starting up another one, and if the kids want to look at jamesgalway.com, but go to the flute group and check out the giveaways that we've got. We've got a $2,000 thing from Nagahara and also from Haynes.
Great flute makers.
This is going to be something the kids can win this.
That's fantastic. Reading about your humble beginnings and your dedication to teaching, it seems perfectly reasonable to me that you talk about giving back.
Well, I'm drawing on my experience. And I don't mean my experience in a classroom. I mean my experience standing in the front line of the firing squad.
You've been there. Well, thank you so much for taking time to chat with me today, Sir James. I really appreciate it.
Okay. Nice to speak to you. Maybe we'll get to meet.
I'll be there.
Okay. Come and say hello.
I will. Take care.
All the best.
All the best to you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.